Welcome to Punch Card Investing, a weekly show dedicated to all things value investing. Whether it be analyzing companies, pitching ideas, or discussing moves by the best investors in the world, we're trying to get one step closer to punching an investment off of our cards. Let's get started.
Thank you, Intro Man. It is time to discuss the best moves from some of the best investors in the world with 13X.
Hey, that's my line.
I know, right? How have you been, Tom? It's been a little while since we've been together, some weeks now since our last episode that you were on.
Yeah, it has been a little while. I've been good. We've had a bit of a shake-up with Punch Card. So I'm kidding. But I've been out for a few weeks. But yeah, good to be back. And episode 100.
It is 100 technically, but really, I have to be honest, I have to come clean here, guys. When I was going back through, I'm uploading kind of all the old podcasts or the old episodes as podcast versions. It's like on a Spotify and Google and all that stuff. And I discovered while I was going through the oldest episodes, I made a mistake. Long ago, I think it was episode 18 or 16. I marked one episode as 18 and then also the next episode is 18 or something like that. So there are two episode 18s, I believe. So I did 18.1 and 18.2. So really, this is the 101st episode that we've done on this show. But we'll call it episode 100 officially because that's what's in the title. So we'll go with that. But that is this is our 100th episode. So I guess it's pretty appropriate that it's one of our regular segments. And that's 13F season, going over some of the best investors and their moves that they report on their quarterly filings, mainly the 13F filing, which shows for certain fund managers all the moves, buys, and sells that they've made, so long as they actually have to report those moves. Just as a disclaimer, the 13Fs don't show everything necessarily that an investor is doing or that an investor owns, so there might be some missing things here that just aren't disclosed on these filings. But nevertheless, it's not a bad idea to take a look at these for potential investing ideas or just to kind of figure out what the philosophy behind the move might be. So that's why we like to do this. So yeah, it is kind of nice that it's our 100th episode. And I also noticed, Tom, you're rocking the Houston shirt again. You picked this up while you were down here probably, 2 years ago now?
I did, yeah. So, I mean, it feels like I'm in Houston now, so we're kind of doing this from the same place.
Trust me, it's like 104 Fahrenheit right now. So whatever that is, centigrade, but very hot centigrade. I'm looking forward to this being over, though I was abroad very recently in Salzburg for my anniversary trip. We were talking about before the show. My wife and I were celebrating our fourth anniversary, though. Weather was a lot cooler, but very rainy in Salzburg at this time of year, I guess. But it was a really great trip. And coming back, it was a little jarring to get slapped in the face with 104 degrees again. So
that's a pretty good description of how it feels sometimes walking out of an airport, right? You're like, it is.
Even just when the tunnel is super hot, like you're not even actually outside yet. You still get walloped. How have you been, Tom? Have you been doing any traveling in the meantime?
A little bit of work travel and stuff, but no, nothing too outrageous. So I'm just trying to get consistent on the YouTube channel again. I've been a bit all over the place this year, so trying to get on a stricter schedule.
You've had some major developments. I mean, you have a miniature Tom going.
So I'm a small human. For sure.
Compounding the human portfolio.
Yes.
Massive growth. But
gone from zero to one. It's a Peter Thiel book, I think.
What's that? Zero to one?
Zero to one. Yeah.
Excellent. No better way to put it, I guess. Now why don't we get into this with 13F season? I think we have to start with our old friend Michael Burry, because he made a bunch of headlines once again. And we'll take a look at one right here. He apparently bet $1.6 billion on a stock market crash, says CNN Business. But just like the last time we discussed one of these big short plays that Michael Burry does from time to time, or where he has a large short position, maybe with options, he basically bought a bunch of put options, and the value of the shares that he was short against, or like the strike value, was $1.6 billion. However, that does not mean he actually put $1.6 billion in cash towards the short, but nevertheless, CNN says that he bet $1.6 billion, which is just simply false. So, but even so, it clearly Michael Burry has some sort of short, or had some sort of short position on. We can actually pull up his moves from the last quarter, because they are very action-packed, that is for sure. He always has a massive amount of turnover. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at Burry's 13F at this point.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? This is end of June, and
he
could have turned the portfolio over like twice or three times since this, you know, 13. Yeah,
you see the massive amount of buys.
I mean, is there
massive amount of sells, and then he has a bit of the big options play that isn't shown here, but there were put options against like the S&P and like the broader market. But for all we know, he's already out of all of these positions, to what you were saying.
Yeah. I mean, like I'm seeing, oh no, I'm just on the first page here. Sorry. But the vast majority of the positions in his portfolio are brand new holdings for the quarter. There's not a lot that are adds or trims or anything like that. They're sort of all in or all out. And he seems to have, he often seems to have like themes of, like several basket bets I've noticed. In past quarters he had like a China Tech basket bet where he had I think Alibaba, JD.com. In prior quarters he's had like basket bets on super leveraged companies that he was kind of talking about on Twitter. So he had like all these businesses with super way out in the future sort of due dates on their debt and stuff. And he does do that type of thing as well. And now he's got the broader market puts. So
I think, he had, I think last quarter, the theme was banks. We can see some of the ones that he sold out of, Wells Fargo, Capital One, to name a couple. First Republic.
Ouch.
of notoriety at this point. But yeah, I'm not seeing any banks now in this new round. I've seen Warner Bros. Though. Yeah, just a broad range of stuff, and then the broader market short, which again could be gone by now. And it was not $1.6 billion in cash, because that would be like the majority of his portfolio value or cash value or something, which was not the case. So. But it made a lot of headlines, so I thought we might start with that. I guess any thoughts on Burry? We kind of reiterate this every time. It's just like you never really know what he's doing.
He's not invested a shamelessly clone, I would say, because you won't be able to keep up. But
you could try.
But I do find looking at Michael Burry's portfolio moves like an interesting list of often like weird deep value stuff just to look at. If that makes any sense.
Anything like, catch your eye then?
Well, there's a few familiar names. Like I'm familiar with Qurate, which has just been absolutely destroyed. I think it's down like 95% in the past few years. I've been in Stellantis in the past. Charter I'm familiar with. There's a lot of kind of common deep value-ish type names in there.
So. Made a pretty big bet on CVS as well, which in recent years has run up. I don't know what it's done this year, but that's 6% or was 6% of his approximate portfolio. And there could be other holdings here that we can't see. But either way, a pretty significant bet by Burry standards.
Yeah.
Expedia topping the list, though, about 10%.
Yeah, it's just hard to know exactly what he's doing.
Is that the theme here? We have MGM Resorts and then Expedia. Is it some sort of bet on travel? I don't know.
I don't know. And just to make it even more confusing, according to, I don't know how accurate this is, but according to Whale Wisdom here, I was going to say that the wrong way around. I think we've actually got most of his assets under management here. But that's another thing to keep in mind. I think when we get to maybe Lilu later on, the 13Fs aren't going to capture all the assets under management.
Sure.
And I wouldn't be surprised if Barry's got like more traditional shorts and cash and stuff that we're not seeing too. So
yeah,
just a very hard one to follow. Like with a lot of investors that the two of us follow, we know that they tend to be sort of concentrated long-term value guys. And most of the time they're fully invested. They don't short, like it's kind of easier to get a handle on what they're doing, but Barry's not one of those people.
Yes. You did mention Li Lu. I don't know if you want to just move on to him then. So I know he had, that's weird, not seeing it here. Oh, here's activity. Our friend Li Lu, here is his activity from quarter to quarter, sold out of Micron.
I've lost your audio, Jack. I don't know if that's just me.
I assume that's just you because I haven't touched anything, but can you hear me now? Well, Tom, I know you're having problems with your headphones before this. So I assume that's what it is. I think it's
me. I'll be back, Jack. Hang on.
All right. But with Li Lu, we have him selling off Micron in the last quarter. It's 100% sell, so a complete sell-off. And I know that also mirrors what Monish Farai did as well. We'll get to him in a bit. But they both sold completely out of Micron. The thing about Li Lu, though, is there's a lot of holdings that he potentially has that we can't see. Just because the 13F isn't generally going to cover a lot of foreign stocks, and if he has a lot of Chinese holdings or other holdings, it's going to be very difficult to see those on a lot of regulatory filings. So if we go back to holdings here on Datarama, you're really only seeing these kind of big American holdings and nothing else. But we know that he at least has some other holdings that aren't shown here. Again, another limitation of 13Fs, but we still can't see that activity where he sold off Micron and then bought a good chunk of East West Bank Corp, which he already owned, but a significant add, only 1% of the U.S. portfolio. So I guess not that significant in the grand scheme of things, but those are the only two moves for Li Lu. Tom, are you back?
Yes, hopefully. I was having headphone issues before we went live here, so hopefully.
Yes. I don't know if you caught anything I was saying then, but I was just mentioning how there's a lot we can't see. And then he sold off of Micron, which is a move that Pabrai did as well. I don't know who was copying who or if they did it independently, but I imagine they talk at some point.
Well, they collaborated on the Micron investment idea. Right. So I assume they're talking about it. Yeah, East West Bank Corp was a new position last quarter and he's added to it.
A little add, though.
Yeah. A little ad, and he's one of the guys that does have a lot of his assets outside of the United States, so keep that in mind.
Yep.
Yeah.
But is there anything there with that Micron move? I don't follow Micron particularly closely, but I know Pabrai's been in it for a long time, so is Li Lu and other kind of in our little value circle that we look at. Is there something going on there that would trigger something like this maybe?
Probably couldn't tell you. I don't really follow it either.
I'm curious. It was kind of a weird holding for what I'll call like a Buffett style value investor, where there's a lot of technological, innovative like things that you have to worry about and that are very hard to predict, I would think. But that's me coming in as a layman. And it just didn't, to me, it never really fit the mold of like what you'd consider like a traditional, in quotes, Buffett style investment. But they were in it for a while. So it must have made sense for quite some time, even with that sense. So not sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think they did okay on it. Pabrai started buying in late 2018 and like the 30s from memory. So hasn't been a disaster or anything. I think the general investment thesis was like the laws of physics are going to sort of slow down the rate of improvement of these chips. And, you know, there's far less players in the industry. So you would think the combination of those two things would mean pricing improves, you know, and returns on capital get better and what have you. But
I know our friend Patrick with Part-Time Investing, who's been on the show a few times now, his kind of thesis, the bull thesis with Micron is that I think it was on the RAM side of things, not so much the chip side of things, but they have a significant portion of RAM or like the memory side. Yes. And that apparently things have gotten so small there that it seems like it's almost impossible to make them that much smaller. So in that sense, they could kind of be at the end of that innovation curve.
And that's what I'm, yeah.
And they have that advantage there perhaps. But either way, like I wouldn't know how to judge that as fair or foul, but it is a pretty compelling argument if you're looking for that sort of, almost first mover advantage, because no one's going to pass them and they're already there. At least for the memory side of things.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe if anyone in the chat is, has been following Micron closely, tell us how far off we are on that general yeah. thesis and whether there's yeah, been actually. any big updates recently.
Or if you're an engineer or something and have a,
yeah. Have any if you actually know what you're talking about, please.
Do you have any trade secrets to share? That would be really great.
Yeah.
So that's Li Lu. I guess we mentioned Pabrias, so we should probably get to him then.
Yes. And then we shouldn't forget to do, the Buff Dog.
Don't worry about that. He's on the cover, we'll get to him. But okay. I really should have put Pabrias on the cover for this one too, because... Let's see, where did he go? Oh, wrong search bar. Brian Funds or Brian Investment Funds. Let me get on Dataroma instead. While I'm trying to pull that up, do you recall other moves from Fabry? Because he sold the rest of his Seritage position as well.
Seritage was it was a weirdly small position. It was like 20 or 30 grand versus he's usually taking $50 or $100 million positions. So but he's out of Micron, he's out of Brookfield Corporation, here we go, out of the tiny bit of Seritage, and he's into two coal companies, AMR and then Consol Energy.
Is there something with coal in particular?
I kind of looked at coal, mainly a couple of Australian companies earlier in the year, I think it was. And the general thesis, it's kind of similar to the oil thesis in a way, but stepped up a couple of levels.
A little more extreme. That's my sense as well.
Exactly. Yeah. So in coal specifically, you've had some outrageously high commodity prices. With the Ukraine war and various things. I'm not super familiar with all the intricacies of coal markets, but you've had some really, really high coal prices. These companies have just like printed crazy amounts of money as a result of that in the past year or so. And in the case of Alpha Metallurgical Resources here, they've just bought back like a ridiculous amount of shares. I'm less familiar with Consol Energy. The couple of Australian companies I was looking at are pretty similar. Like they've just got crazy cash flows. They've cleared a bunch of debt. So Whitehaven is one which is doing more share repurchases on the Australian Stock Exchange. And then Yancoal has a very major shareholder. I'm forgetting the numbers off the top of my head, but it might be 60 or 80% of the company. So buybacks are a less practical option there. So they've been paying out like, again, this is just ballpark, but like 25% dividend yields or something crazy. So they all seem to be a very similar bet on like they're really, really cheap on a multiple of current earnings basis, but we have no idea whether those earnings are going to sustain because they're on very high coal prices relative to what coal prices have been historically. Right. And they're just paying all the cash out in dividends and buybacks. So I guess you have to have a view on how long that cash flow is going to last. And
it feels like that would be a short term, almost a trade style, but that, I don't know. Unless it is just like there's some sort of buyback play built in, and that is the thesis. It has less to do with the coal price, if you think buybacks can outpace it or something.
It's interesting. Like Monish was actually on a podcast with Meb Faber recently. I think it came out just yesterday.
Okay.
And he didn't name these two companies specifically, but he said, I just found two companies in the US that are doing XYZ and the thesis like he's talking about these two companies, it's fairly clear. And he kind of compares it to his old IPSCO investment. I'm not sure if that's one you're familiar with, Jack.
No, yeah, no, explain it.
Sure. So, yeah, long story short, I think this was an early 2000s Pabrai investment. More or less, the company was trading for, I think it was $45 a share. They had $15 a share net cash, and they had they sold these like tubular steel products, and they had like purchase orders in place essentially for the next like couple of years worth of revenue. And they were guiding that they were going to earn about $15 per share each year for the next 2 years. So in 2 years, you get $30 of earnings plus your 15 in net cash that was already kind of sitting on the balance sheet. And you suddenly have, you know, net cash equivalent to the stock price that Pabrai was looking at the time. So, yeah, he bought it for $45. I think IPSCO eventually got bought out for like 145 or 130 or something like that. So they earned the $15 a year for the first couple of years. They actually, I think, came out and said, we're going to have another year of visibility of this $15 of earnings. So he was kind of talking through that story yesterday, and he sort of seemed to think that these might be very similar bets. He used the word guaranteed earnings with IPSCO, and it seemed like he was saying that again with these two companies. I did a bit of a like looking through reports and stuff to see if they did have any of these contracted revenues. I couldn't find anything. And spot coal prices are the last thing from guaranteed, I guess.
Yeah, right.
Like, you know, with what they're going to be in future. So if anyone's found a bit more evidence on exactly how that might look for these two companies, I'd be very interested to hear. But it sounds like that's the general bet. Like, he thinks they're going to produce roughly their market cap in cash in a short space of time. And if they do, it should work out well. So
yeah, I guess it strikes me as one of those heads I win, tails I don't lose much, maybe. Because if you can make all your cash immediately, or a lot of it back immediately, even if things don't look so good at a year or two from now, you should be pretty mitigated, you would think, as long as they're decent capital allocators, of course. Okay, so yeah, I see.
The key bit is having some confidence that they're actually going to produce the cash flow.
Right, that's the risk. You've got to have some sort of risk.
Yeah, all of these companies have a lot of operating leverage. So coal prices down a little, earnings down a lot. Same with an oil company. Yeah, so.
Do you know if these bets are, because at least the way it's shown on Datarama, it's like 80% of the public portfolio that we can see, but he has other holdings besides this that we know of, like Racist, for example, which isn't shown here. It says it's 80% of the portfolio, which is around the same as what Micron was on Datarama. It's at 80%, but I don't think it was 1-to-1 Micron to this, right? A dollar for dollar, probably smaller.
I wouldn't think so, but I think Pabrai has told his investors he caps himself at 10% bets at cost. So. Yeah.
Actually, I realize I could just do the shares times the price. I mean,
we don't know the exact price that he's buying and selling, but
right. But sure. But even just now, we're at about $200 a share for Alpha, which is 200 times 362, 649. So that would be about a $72 million position into Alpha. So pretty substantial. Is that around, what is this fund size at? I believe that's around 10%, isn't it?
What was the number you came up with there?
$72 million or so in Alpha.
That would be about right, I would say. Yeah.
He's not over a billion, right?
I don't know. I'm fairly sure he's not.
Okay. So about, we'll call it 10%. So maybe it was a 10% bet. And then, CIX.
You know, the real time to buy Alpha was like at March 2020. You'd have almost 100 bagger if you caught the low.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, what chaos. March 2020. What chaos. Just crazy. Everyone lost their minds, for better or for worse. The Console Energy was, assuming it has the same amount of shares now, is about a $17 million position. So a lot smaller. So the bigger bet, obviously, is in Alpha. And substantial at that, about 10% of the portfolio, we'll say.
Yeah. And I mean, Prabhrai's been in Australian stocks before. So, you know, there's a chance he's in some of the Aussie coal companies as well. We just can't see it.
Yeah. Or elsewhere as well.
Maybe he's got 10 coal companies in the portfolio, but we're only seeing two.
Well, what was the, maybe if Micron what? Was sold, if Micron was sold today, what would, how big was that position that he took off? Do you happen to know? I'll do the math, but
I'm not sure.
That's 1.5 million shares. So that was about $100 million position he took off. And so he rolled the vast majority of that into AMR.
Yep.
At least at today's prices. I don't know. And I don't think it's fluctuated that much. Yeah, it's actually gone up this year. So it wouldn't have been that much lower than that. So call it $100 million sell in Micron. That's a big sell. Moving $100 million around and then throwing 80 of that or 70 of that into a coal company.
Yeah, and that's just a 10% bit.
Right.
No worries.
It's a different game. Okay. Yeah. Anything else
if anyone's really interested in Alpha, Jason did a good podcast with his initial research on it the other day. So,
oh, I haven't seen that yet. Okay, I'll have to watch that.
That'd be worth checking out.
Yeah.
He goes through all the all the details on the big share buybacks, and I think Alpha recently cut their dividend because they wanted to do more share buybacks, and there's a few interesting kind of details through with that one if you want to hear it.
Music to our ears, right?
yeah.
Who needs a dividend when you can buy back? Okay. And any final thoughts on Prabhrai then?
Nice, throwing it back to his early 2000s deep value days. So it's cool to see.
Let's see here. Who else we got? I guess we got to do Buffett because
you want to very quickly do our namesake, Jack.
Yeah, I actually checked Norbert Liu earlier, and I think he did like a trim of was it Ally?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Correct. Okay. What do I win? But I'll pull him up real quick. Norbert Liu, Punch Card Management. Here he is. Just a reduction of Ally Financial. I'll go back to the full holdings, leaving him with four holdings that we can see of Berkshire, Ally, Winnebago, and Smith & Wesson. Smith & Wesson being the noticeably smaller of the bunch.
Yeah. I actually haven't had a chance to look. I see you've got ticker open there. Jack, can we check out Norbert Liu's international holdings if anything shows up?
Mm-hmm.
I guess you just got to search Punch Card Management. But he's been in Naked Wines in the past. I want to say like some sort of auto, Motor Point Group as well.
It hasn't been updated since the last year. When would it? I don't know when it would have last been updated, but yeah, it's still showing Naked Wines here.
Yeah, Motor Point Group. We got an update from March, I guess, but no change in holding.
Still relatively small positions. Compared to Berkshire, Ally, and Winnebago, and Countryside for that matter.
Well, Countryside has been merged into like Vistry or Vista or something like that. That doesn't exist anymore. So, that shouldn't be showing up.
Yeah. I don't know what day it was last updated here, but yeah, we'll see what happens to that.
Yeah, I think the non-US
was it a cash buy or will you get shares out of it?
I think a combination.
Okay.
I remember it being really complicated in the Shameless Kloner portfolio.
Yeah, I seem to remember
do a bunch of adjustments. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Anyhow. That was a little while ago then. Okay. Yeah, but otherwise, not a whole lot of action.
Yeah, actually, just very quickly, I see you did have Prabhrai on there. We actually missed that he has doubled his racist logistics shares.
Yeah,
that's because they did a capital raise. So, if there's any racist shareholders in the in the chat, they might be able to tell us the details, but I think you could buy very discounted Races Logistics shares if you were a existing shareholder. So the value of the position actually hasn't grown that much, but the shares he owns have doubled. So
easy double.
Easy double and shares owned, yes. I think we were on our way to Buffett there, Jack, but
there's a fine detour. But yes, now to Buffett. Here's the activity. Rather than showing all the holdings, we'll just show the activity because there's a billion of them.
There we go. Here. So one Turkish lira was the price you could buy an additional Races share for. Against,
how kind.
I don't know what the market price was. Maybe 30 to 40.
How many could you buy?
I don't know. People in the chat can tell us. I think it was one for one from memory.
Just as many as you could? Or what was the raise at? I forget what amount.
Not sure on the details. I think they've raised capital a few times in this way. Which is interesting, but
very aggressive, but nice.
Yeah.
But anyways, here's Buffett. We have,
yes,
the big, I think the highlight here probably is the big sell-off in Activision.
Yes. Well, we had that news before the 13F because
right, we did.
What, form four or
I
something.
Guess, yeah, I guess it's not news anymore, but the big update of the quarter, I suppose.
But he fully missed the run-up, unfortunately, so.
He'll be all right.
He'll survive, yeah. Sure it doesn't keep him up at night.
I think, what's our cash? Their cash is almost back up to its peak, right? Where it was recently. Is it like 140 or 150 billion or something?
I'm not sure.
I might be overshooting that, but his cash pile is making the news again, which means it's big.
Yeah, I mean, people forget to look at it as like a percentage of assets or percentage of the market cap or something. They just see a big number.
It is a big number, though.
Well,
it's a big number.
I'm pretty sure they've got $1 trillion in assets now. So
yeah. It's wild. Yeah,
that's a big number.
I mentioned it before, but just like, one of the more striking things about at the Berkshire meeting is just hearing people just casually talk in billions. Like Buffett's just talking, yes. He talks about billions like it's $10 because it kind of is. It's just wild. Here we did, you know, 15 billion in revenue in this division or whatever. It's just, it's just 15 billion in the quarter or this year. It's just crazy.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, that's definitely the biggest sell, I would say, was the Activision move. Bit of shuffling around with oil, so he's trimmed Chevron, added to Oxy. And then probably the thing that jumped out to me the most, it's right down the bottom end of the portfolio, so it's probably Ted or Todd, but there's three home builders were purchased there, so D.R. Horton, NVR, and Lena Corp. I'm only really familiar with NVR, I must say, but yeah, a little basket bet on the home builders. Very different weightings between the three of those, though, I must say.
Yeah, you know, almost all of that tiny basket, almost all the concentration is in D.R. Horton. I wonder why. I'm always struggle with the home buying, home buyers bets, just because I guess it depends on the real estate that they own, if they own any. Because that'll obviously make a big difference. Regional differences will play a big part, but it always feels like a very macro dependent bet. But that's probably a very flawed way to look at it because real estate's so localized. And you think that you wouldn't want to do a home buyer in this rising rate environment where things are kind of slowing transaction value wise. But, if it's a longer term hold, I don't know, but, yeah. Anyways, I always find the home buyer bets a little hard to figure out unless you really have a good understanding of where all their stuff is, which maybe they do. But if it's a basket, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean something like NVR. The results been lumpy, but averaged out returns on capital have been really good. It's always traded in like at like a single digit multiple, and they just eat themselves with retiring shares. So that combination works pretty well.
Maybe it's almost like some of these commodity producers, almost if you count housing kind of like a commodity, because it sort of is, where housing prices will go up and down just like a commodity. And when that happens, they have the leverage built in towards it. So it almost behaves like a commodity sort of business, I guess, if you want to look at it that way.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah.
Maybe that's a bit too aggressive in the that comparison, but I think some of the fundamentals are pretty similar. And much like having great land for mining operations matters, having great land for future housing projects or around great metro areas that are growing, that's going to benefit in the long run, or it will benefit the balance sheet. Maybe there's a lot of that similar sort of analysis going on. But anyways, anything else on Berkshire that caught your eye or thought was interesting?
Yeah, I haven't really had a chance to look at it, but...
well, this is it.
No, I was going to say I haven't really had a chance to look at Capital One Financial, but I think that was new last quarter and they've added to it again, which is interesting.
Yeah, that was after they sold out of Wells, or was that a while ago?
That was a while back, I think.
Yeah, that was a while back. Didn't they sell out of another bank recently? Which one?
They cleared all the banks this year and last year.
Okay, it was all of them.
Pretty much. Except Bank of America. Yeah, but that was because it was more of a...
Not the sweetheart deal.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, so all the other banks were out. So.
But if you... on Datarama, can you just search Capital One Financial? Because I think there's been quite a few... I think there's been quite a few super investors get into it recently. Oh, there we go. If you go activity, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's activity. And here you go.
Yeah, last quarter and... Burridge would just dumped it, but he was in and out within a quarter.
He did his little banking basket we talked about earlier. That was last quarter, or but I guess two quarters ago now.
With Capital One, like there's a lot of these guys
seem not, to be in. Not really, other than we have a credit card with them, but that's it. I don't know what segment of the business is credit cards, but I know they are a pretty big credit card provider, I guess credit card provider is the right word. You know, the Visa and MasterCard are the processors, but the actual credit provider are the banks typically. So I don't know what segment of the business is that versus more traditional banking, but I'm not really too familiar otherwise. Something must be catching people's eye because we have all these ads. Maybe they were just unfairly beat down by the banking crisis and all that. That
quite possibly, yeah.
Seemed to climax a few months ago, and then the media decided to stop covering it, and now no one cares.
they got down to 0.6 times book in May.
Yeah, so maybe just cheapness and unfairly cheap, perhaps.
Yeah, and they still, again, it's lumpy, but like double-digit returns on equity still. So,
okay.
Interesting.
But yeah, it's still relatively small by Berkshire standards, though. A tiny little change to the portfolio, but 25% add to the position itself.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, just a casual 2.5 million shares at 100.
Yeah, right, exactly. Again, millions are billions are the measuring unit. It's a different world. Who else?
Who have we forgotten? Charlie did nothing.
Bill Ackman is on the thumbnail, so we got to cover him.
Okay. I hadn't seen the thumbnail. That was all you. So.
Yes. I was Bernie, Buffett, and Ackman.
Okay.
But I know he headed to Google a bit.
Is that guy going to launch another SPAC anytime soon?
Yeah, I don't know what he's going to do. I haven't been following as much. since I sold my portfolio, but it usually isn't a ton of turnover for him. Here's a ticker version for Pershing Square. I guess the big move here is he sold off a quarter of Lowe's. And yeah, Universal Music Group is shown here. Sold off a quarter of his Lowe's position, and that's been a very good position for him in recent years. So I guess trimming now while the going is good, and rotating some of that into Google, which is now a significant chunk of the portfolio, which is what he added to this last quarter.
Bill Ackman's not the kind of investor that usually sort of trims and adds little amounts, really, is he?
No, he does it from time to time. No, he will. I'm trying to think. I'm thinking of, he sold off Starbucks if you recall the Domino's move, which was a quick one. He sold off Starbucks and then shortly thereafter went into Domino's Pizza, which he's now already out of. I think sometimes he did Netflix, right? And that then was quickly out of that. And that's been a missed opportunity, that's for sure. And then since then, he added to Google, and that's been most of it. The big move of the previous year before that was Universal Music Group, which was all the SPAC drama and all that stuff. Haven't heard much there.
And Canadian Pacific, I think, is back in the portfolio after it being out for quite a while.
Yeah, right? Was that also
that was back in there earlier this year?
Yeah, I think. Yeah, was that this year or last year? I feel like that was around. That was around Netflix time, but maybe not, or sometime after Netflix. But anyways, generally you're not going to see a lot of churn quarter to quarter. Though it's been pretty active this one, I guess.
So it looks like he owned Canadian Pacific from 2011 to 2016, and then got back in right at the end of 2021.
Okay, it was at the end of the year. So yeah, after Netflix. Was Netflix last year? Netflix was early 2022, right? Or was it the year before?
Man, yes. He was out early 22.
Okay, so that was the end of the first quarter or something like that, 2022. So right before that, he had done Canadian Pacific. Okay.
Yeah, but he actually he added to it 417% at the end of 2022.
So. Okay, that's what I'm recalling then. It was after Netflix was the big ad, I guess.
I think he's been pretty public in saying that selling Canadian Pacific was one of his more significant mistakes in 2016. So he paid, it looks like, about three times what he sold it for to get back in.
Yeah, ouch. Well,
yeah,
I think he'll be all right as well.
5 years later.
but he maintains that really serious concentration, even more so than a lot of these big investors. Rarely are you going to see anything significantly less than about 10%. Like Universal Music Group showing up here is 29% of the portfolio. The rest are hovering kind of around 10-ish%.
Yeah, and he seems to be willing to hold on to stuff like Chipotle even when it gets crazy and it gets optically expensive.
The multiple has definitely run up, but they keep making money. And one thing other than Domino's, I guess, which was a quick flop, but he wasn't in it for very long. He has had good success with restaurants, with Chipotle, restaurant brands, Starbucks.
I thought he did pretty well in Domino's.
It dropped. It shot up like right as he bought it because it had a big dip, but then I believe it declined thereafter. I'm not sure when exactly he sold though. But I don't think he made anything with Domino's. I could be wrong about that, but at least when I was casually looking at it, I'm pretty sure it had declined since he had bought it after an initial run up. But either way, his track record has been very strong with restaurants.
Yeah, it looks like it was about flat, maybe up a little.
Okay.
Bought at 367, and the quarter he sold went for, I don't know, anywhere from 350 to 400. So,
okay. So not much harm either way and potential benefit.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's Bill Ackman. Concentrated as ever. One thing you don't see though, are any derivatives, options trades that he might have, because he does put on hedges from time to time, sometimes famously or infamously. So you're not going to see that here. I'm not aware of if he still has an interest rate hedge on, but he had that on for a while and that was performing well.
Definitely. Can we take a quick look actually at Canadian Pacific on ticker here? Mm-hmm. I find the railroads really interesting companies to look at, because I think if you were to take, say, just their absolute net income or operating income, I think it's probably been roughly flat, maybe growing a little. But they've just levered up and bought back a lot of shares.
No, it's been going up pretty steadily.
Yeah. I mean, if you go out. Okay. So, yeah.
But I think a lot of it's through acquisition, if I'm not mistaken.
Are there railroads left to acquire? Are they not all massive now?
No, I mean, they are massive, but it's usually big acquisitions, big mergers.
Yeah. Yeah. If you take shares outstanding, I think they will be plummeting.
Where are we?
Maybe not weighted average diluted shares outstanding. Yeah, maybe it's some of the other railroads I'm thinking.
Yeah, they've been going down. That's actually not so bad. Income going down, weighted average diluted shares going down, income going up.
Yeah, maybe if you can you clear up net income and look at just shares. What's that graph look like? Okay, and then where it says add tickers to chart, can you throw on like Union Pacific maybe? That's possibly the railroad I'm thinking of. One of these things has been Union Pacific's a bit more of a cannibal maybe.
Was this an acquisition here? I feel like
I don't know. I'm not sure.
At the end. Making room for Bill Ackman, I guess.
Could have been a world record CEO bonus. No, I'm not sure.
That'd be pretty hefty. What's the market cap on Canadian Pacific? It is
something about
73 billion, so nice and hefty.
Yeah.
All right.
Who else we got, Jack?
Who else you got, Tom?
Well, Munger did nothing, so that's not going to be very interesting to look at. Diasphere, much the same.
I would say Tom Gaynor. I just pulled him up, but it's just a lot.
Yeah, it's very diverse.
Just a lot of stuff going on.
Could look at Rob Van Aal, maybe.
Sure.
What's he been up to?
All right, here he comes. A little interactive brokers ad.
Yeah.
For Rob Van Aal. Added about half to that position, though pretty small part of the portfolio. And very tiny ads to Credit Acceptance and tiny sells to Salesforce and Meta.
Mm.
If we go to his full holdings here. Just tiny little trims and ads. Well, I guess Interactive Brokers was significant, but otherwise not much.
Who are there any other people on Datarama and Interactive Brokers? I feel like that's been one where people have added. Brian Lawrence, that's who I was thinking of. He's got a big position in Interactive Brokers. 18% of the portfolio. Are you familiar with Brian Lawrence?
No.
He's got a really good, sort of intro to value investing type lecture on YouTube, actually, which is worth watching. And he was on the Investors podcast start of last year, maybe. Runs a very concentrated, long term kind of value portfolio. I think he's had his fund since 2002 or 2003, maybe ballpark, early 2000s, definitely. And he's been quite significantly. So
I just wrote that down for the investors podcast and then the lecture. Have you been following him for a while?
Since I heard that podcast, probably a year.
Okay.
He got me interested in Charter Communications. He's been in and out of that over the years.
Yeah, quite concentrated. Here it is.
Yeah.
With the second
TransDigm also, yeah. That's right.
And that's TransDigm you just trimmed, it looked like. There's Google as well, which he also trimmed.
Yeah, I think Gildan is a relatively recent addition. Kind of low cost clothing producer.
Yeah. That's a Phil Town holding now, or is he still in it?
Not sure if it's a current Phil Town holding, but it definitely has been. Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, he
got into it. I've never seen Gildan anywhere is with Phil Town.
Yeah, I think founder operator still at Gildan. And Phil Town's been in it in the past when they were getting crushed by high cotton prices.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
A rule one event, as he would say.
A rule one event. And that, yeah, those costs came down and earnings went up as did the stock, and he did pretty well. So, yeah.
All right.
Interesting. You're not, you're taking a look at Interactive Brokers as a potential investment before, Jack?
No, I'd never as an investment. All I know just from a business perspective is they have very broad availability, and that's definitely their strong suit, is just being able to access many different markets. But yep. User interface leaves something to be desired. But
it's horrible. You
know. don't put it so lightly, Tom.
Yeah. But they seem to have kind of the best access out of anyone, pretty much.
Yeah. Seems like Fidelity does pretty good as well with access, at least from here in the States.
Right.
But yeah, it seems like Interactive Brokers is number one for like the broadest access for the most countries from the most places, though obviously there are exceptions.
Yep.
How about our friend Chuck Akray? Our friend, you know, we know real well.
Yeah, sure. What's Chuck been doing? I don't really follow Chuck Akray. He kind of just buys stuff and sits on it for 40 years, right?
Yeah.
That's his MO.
Little trims and reductions. At Brookfield, he added a tiny, tiny bit to Brookfield. Meanwhile, Pabry sold out. That's one we didn't talk about much with Pabry, is how he sold out of Brookfield, which is kind of weird because he had recently added to it.
I think he was maybe in there for the spinoff.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, right, because they got distributed whatever the other shares were called.
The asset manager, yeah.
Yeah, right. The Brookfield Asset Management shares.
Yep. And I guess probably just an opportunity cost thing with the coal companies, I suppose.
Sure.
But Akray's like a super you know, high quality business kind of guy, right?
Yeah. Moody's, American Tower, Visa, MasterCard, Visa and MasterCard. The Visa and MasterCard makes up 30% of his portfolio here, at least that we can see.
Hmm.
That's a big bet on one sector.
Yes.
And then we're talking about $3.5 billion between the two approximately.
Yeah. Surprised how small Berkshire is. I thought that had been a big long time holding for him, but maybe not.
Yeah, these are kind of weird holdings here with Dollar Tree, Berkshire. Verisk? I'm not familiar with that one. But it's extremely top heavy. Once you get past the first handful of holdings, it drops off quickly for concentration.
Yeah. I think that's the high class problem of when your stocks go up a lot, you tend to have some big ones dominating. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, very definitely the emphasis on the high quality for sure.
Yeah.
Very moaty type businesses. Definitely. Yeah. American Tower, Visa, MasterCard. That's like definition. And Moody's as well. Modi kind of companies. Is Modi a word? I'm making it a word.
It is now. Yeah, of course.
I've used it before. Moti.
I know what you mean. So
yeah,
it's got to be a word.
Of that which has moats. Moats. <Yeah. laughs> So, okay. Anyone else? Probably have time for one, maybe two more.
Who else? Who else do we usually cover?
Carl Icahn. We haven't. And do we ever cover him?
Michael Carl.
Cliff Sosin.
Been in trouble this year.
Anything from Cliff Sosin? Just tiny reductions. That's all it looks like.
Yeah. Icahn's mainly he's mainly an energy investor these days, isn't he?
He's mainly a PR defender these days.
That's just true.
There's just some nasty short report from Hindenburg, right?
Yes.
Let's see.
Chris Blomstrand, I found his 13F kind of interesting this quarter.
Let's go to him then.
He's sort of a big chunk of his portfolio is just Berkshire. And then he seems to also buy a bunch of stuff that Berkshire's been recently buying. So it's kind of and it's an interesting portfolio in that respect. But
here's all the holdings. Pretty much everything. It seems like everything got touched, whether it be a buy or a sell.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to talk to him about like how he thinks about those adjustments, because he seems to a lot of.
What inspired you to do a 2.3% add to Dollar Tree while you did a 0.07 reduction in Merck?
Well, and a 76% add to Dollar General.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, why?
And he's been one of the guys that sort of followed Buffett into Paramount also. So, still adding to that with the price coming down. So
yeah, where is that? Oh, there it is. Yeah, about 5% of the portfolio.
15% addition.
And it's on top of the exposure you would have had. I got some gold here with Newmont and Kinross. That's almost 10% of the portfolio is gold producers.
Yeah. And some of these are very long-time holdings. Like I think he's steadily been getting out of Costco, but can you just go into some of the transaction history for Costco? I want to say he's been in that for a very long time. If you click the sort of three lines next to Costco on the hard left, that should tell you.
Oh, nice. I didn't realize you could do that.
Yeah. How far back does that go?
2018.
Okay. Oh, but it starts with an opening amount of shares. So I think he's been in it earlier than that. There's no initial buy.
Yeah, right. There's no initial ad.
Yeah. I'm sure he's been in Costco. I think since like early 2000s sort of thing is what.
Fair enough.
Comes to mind. So he's done very well in that.
And this Mercury, what's Mercury General? What is that? Do you know what that is?
You could tell me.
Yeah, that was a significant add, 5% of the portfolio.
Yep.
Hey, what do they do? Engages in writing auto insurance. Along with, so they're insurer. Oh, like Mercury. I feel like I should know that, but yeah. And homeowners insurance, commercial, auto, commercial property, mechanical protection, umbrella insurance. It sounds like mainly auto insurance. Okay.
Yeah, he does seem to be in and out of a lot of insurance stuff. Like he was in Allegheny when Berkshire purchased it. So he still owns Allegheny technically through Berkshire, but he had a direct holding in that previously. And he knows Berkshire inside out, so presumably he gets a lot of insight into insurance from that.
Yeah, reason. Berkshire's both like 30% of his portfolio or something. Over that.
More than that.
Almost 35.
Yep, he's been in it since the 90s, I think.
Sounds nice.
Yeah, yes. And he's been in a lot more energy stuff, I guess, following Buffett in that way.
Has Exxon down there. I saw that earlier. He's got Exxon.
He seems to have reduced some of the oil oil holders.
Trim the chevron, but that's already a small position.
Yeah, shell.
Shell, also very tiny. So it's so strange when you hold on to this small of a position. Like what for? Taxes?
Well, I think that's exactly it, actually. Yeah, he's mentioned on podcasts, which I found quite interesting, that often he'll have new clients join the fund, for example, and he'll sort of inherit super appreciated positions that the clients own for a long time. And so for tax reasons, they sit in the portfolio, even though he's never actually himself bought it. It's just kind of come with the client. So I think, yeah, you do get some weird stuff like that.
Yeah. But even so, it's such a small position. But yeah, whatever you want to do for your tax strategy, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It can make a difference, I guess, when you have a bunch of little ones like that.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Final thoughts, Tom. Anyone else that we might have missed? I'm sure there are many we could have covered, but...
All that I can think of. Should we take some questions, maybe, if people...
Sure, yeah, maybe one or two before we wrap up. If anyone has any questions here, I know it's a bit of a... We've been kind of bouncing around with time, so it seems like we have a different live group every time now.
Yeah. I see we had a super chat from Luis right back at the start before we went live.
I meant to mention that. Thank you, Luis. He says, let's see Investing with Tom's 13F. When are we going to see that, Tom?
I don't know. It's going to cost you more than $4, though. Sorry, Louis.
Hey, we appreciate it, nevertheless.
Yeah, no, definitely. Luis is always early in the chats, I've noticed. He's very consistent.
Definitely on this day. I think I'm on the newer time, on Saturday's US time as well. But yeah, he's but he's in both either way, whether it be Friday or Saturday US.
Yeah, for sure.
Scrolling through here. We had a lively conversation about Turkey. Our man Eunice is in the chat. Someone was talking about Micron earlier. We were asking about quality. Is that Stuka? Stuka Ralph says Micron's quality is pretty bad in comparison with Samsung. He works in large tech. Says it doesn't last very long and is faulty. This is according to him. So we'll take his word for it, Tom, because we have a little context otherwise.
Sounds good.
Research Micron bad. Done. Micron bad.
Yes. What else we got?
Maybe this one from Eunice would be a good one to end on. You could put one we've explored a number of times in varying forms. If you had to put all of your money into one stock and could not sell for 10 years, which stock would you choose? This is 10 years, not... I think we've done like lifetime before.
Yeah. I mean, is this at current prices or?
Oh, of course.
Yeah. The answer may change if prices were different, but I don't know. Berkshire's the easy answer.
I was going to say, you're thinking Berkshire's my
not investment advice at all.
But it still feels like cheating though, because it's really like buying a fund. Other Luis says SPY.
Yeah, that's right. You could say SPY and just turn on dividend reinvestment or something.
Yeah, right. If it's just one. I like to say I like the arrogance of betting on myself. I'll bet on myself. You give me that stock. But I think if I was being conservative, which, you know, you got 10 years and you can't access it, yeah, it probably makes sense to do something pretty diversified.
Yeah.
But that's just me. Depends on what you're trying to do. A highly concentrated bet in one stock could pay off very handsomely, but it also couldn't. And if 10 years is a long time, a lot can happen. So you probably want something pretty locked in at this point that probably isn't going to be going away. At least that's how I think about it.
Yep.
Okay. It's a good spot to wrap up on. Tom, appreciate you coming back on. And
Pleasure.
Wishing you the best with your fatherly duties as you try and figure out your new routine with the channel, getting the content back up. You've been pretty productive, I've noticed. So I wouldn't kick yourself too
trying
hard.
Trying to be, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, hope to have you on again soon. And for those of you who are still with us, be sure to subscribe if you haven't already so you don't miss future episodes. We're rolling out a lot of new content here on Punch Card. We've got a couple of new series that are up and running now, Contrarian Corner and Firm Discussions. So check those out for some more in-depth stock analyses into individual companies, just talking about what's going on there and what's going on with their stocks. And if you like those series, then definitely be sure to let us know in the comments on those videos or these videos. If you want to see something else in particular, please let us know. Otherwise, thanks for watching and until next time.
Thanks for tuning in to Punch Card Investing. The contents of this show should not be used as investment advice or as a recommendation to invest in a particular security. Please consult with a licensed investment advisor if you need investment advice. All investments carry risk and the potential for monetary loss. Thank you, and see you next week.